Yeah?
Good morning. My name is Frank Sinatra.
What?
You can't take your eyes off of him. He does something magical or mesmerizing that keeps you staring at him. He's just so unique.
He was a very passionate man.
I kissed you, lady, and you kissed me back.
He loved hard, he laughed hard, he hated hard.
He could destroy you.
Men would love to behave like him.
That's the way to want to be, rough and tumble, fighting, drinking. A man's man.
It is such an ancient pitch, one that I'd never switch. There ain't no nicer witch than you.
A crowd go wild for him. A woman kisses his picture on the front of a magazine.
Frank Sinatra's music for his fans was the soundtrack of their lives.
What is America to me? A name, a map, or a flag I see.
His personal growth was in sync with what was happening in America at the time. Fly me
to a montage of original film footage. President John F. Kennedy. Two astronauts place an American flag on the moon. Like on. President Reagan bestows an honor on Frank Sinatra.
In other words,
Frank sings,
hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me.
He was the voice of America.
Fill my heart with song.
Hundreds of squares of yellow appear on a black background like lights in rising tower blocks. A Broadview Pictures film in cooperation with ZDFARTE.
And adore.
A graphic of black skyscrapers dotted with yellow lights stands against a yellow background, creating the New York skyline.
In other words,
the camera pans back to reveal the skyline is in the rim of a Frank Sinatra-style trilby hat. A graphic of Frank Sinatra picks up the hat, Sinatra the voice of America. The graphic of Frank Sinatra leans up against his name and lights. Original footage of gray-haired Frank.
In January of 1994, Frank Sinatra is 79 years old. He's been performing on stage for over 70 years. He is the icon of American pop culture. This year, he will again perform concerts all around the world. His fourth wife, Barbara, always at his side.
The Diamond Jubilee Tour, September 1990.
America, Japan, Spain, Norway. Tens of thousands of spectators want to hear Frank Sinatra sing live one more time.
The great man takes to the stage.
Frank said, I think they're coming to say goodbye to me now. And that's exactly what they were doing. Every city we were going to, they were coming to say goodbye to him and thank him for all the wonderful years of his music.
Number one, king of the hill. These little town blues.
Sinatra was a man who was very seldom happy in his life. That he was driven, that he was frequently excited. He was excited when he was gambling. He was excited when at the chase of beautiful women, at the conquest of beautiful women. But Sinatra was really only happy, only truly happy, when he was singing well, when he was singing at his best.
Charles Aznavour, Chansonnier. Subtitles. Sinatra represents the American dream. He's an immigrant child who didn't receive the education he should have. If you aren't offered the same chances as the others, you want to be stronger than the people who were born there.
On veut être plus fort que ceux du pays.
At the turn of the 20th century, Sinatra's parents migrate from Italy to America. They live in New Jersey. The Hudson River separates them from New York and from the American dream. Francis Albert Sinatra is born on December the 12th, 1915. The 13-pound baby barely survives the birth. Afterwards, his mother, Dolly, is unable to have any more children.
He was a lonely child. He was an only child. He grew up among immigrants in Hoboken, New Jersey, that was filled with Italian Americans, Irish Americans, Jewish Americans, African Americans. And in those days, those were the days of big families, lots of children.
An original sepia photo shows the bustling streets. Three poor young children huddled together. The faces of the children are etched with sadness.
His mother, Dolly, a midwife, is the breadwinner of the Sinatra family. To lessen the hardship of immigrants, she also performs abortions. She knows everyone in Hoboken and is also politically active.
She was a precinct captain, you know, a Democratic precinct captain in Hoboken. And he talked about his father being a boxer.
The father was a man of very few words. He was probably illiterate. I think he was one of those people who, when he wrote his name, he wrote an X.
And his father fought under the name of Marty O'Brien because in those days there was so much prejudice against Italians that fighters would change their name to an Irish name.
According to Americans, Italian immigrants aren't white. They rank just slightly above African Americans. And the prejudices against them are similar.
The cliche of African Americans were that they were happy people, they were singing and dancing all the time.
Whatever they do, they keep smiling through.
In the case of Italian Americans, they were eating pasta instead of watermelon. The African Americans ate watermelon, the Italian Americans ate pasta.
After his father's boxing career, the Sinatras opened the bar Marty O'Brien's.
Behind the bar, in case there was trouble, his mother used to keep a baton, a stick. And when Frank misbehaved, she would hit him with the stick. His mother could be sadistic. She pushed him under the waves once at the seashore. Her own child, her only child, pushed him down under the water.
At the same time, she spoils her son. She buys him expensive suits and candy. Frank Sinatra even has his own bedroom.
Sinatra said in later life, "My mother was a pisser. I never knew whether she was going to hug me or hit me." And I think this really reverberated in his relationships with people and especially with women throughout the rest of his life.
Unlike the other immigrants, Frank Sinatra's family always has enough to eat. But the factory closures and the throngs of millions of unemployed at the end of the 1920s leave their mark on the boy. As he would later remark, the Depression showed him he can lose everything if he's not the best. Radio, the new medium, changes the lives of millions of people, including Frank Sinatra's. His mother buys him the device that overcomes distance and borders. From then on, the boy listens to music programs from New York every day and sings popular songs.
Radio was crucial to Sinatra's growth. First of all, before he was ever in the business, his idol, Bing Crosby, was on the air.
It's Monday morn, you're feeling blue, a great big wash awaiting you.
Bing Crosby is the vocal artist at the start of the 1930s. His smooth voice makes him the first crooner to melt women's hearts.
It was those radio performances and record work that inspired Sinatra to say, that's what I want to do.
But he's still just singing in his parents' bar, using traditional methods.
Frank didn't have the sound system. He began singing with a megaphone, and he was such a figure of fun, of mockery, that when he performed, people in the audience, boys in the audience mainly, would try to throw coins into the megaphone, to throw the coins into his mouth.
Frank Sinatra hates school. He's not interested in any of his subjects. He drops out when he's 15. His father is furious and occasionally throws him out of the house. Frank Sinatra does odd jobs as a dock worker or an errand boy, but he never holds down a job for long.
When I was 17,
he starts to envy the workers who commute from Hoboken to New York every day.
It was a very good year.
Original black and white footage of busy commuters arriving in New York. A black and white portrait photo of a young, handsome Frank.
Frank Sinatra was quietly embarrassed and humiliated by the fact that he didn't have a college education, barely made it out of high school. So he became a lifelong student. He read voraciously and loved intelligent discussion. He liked surrounding himself with brilliant people. And when he had the opportunity, he shared that lesson with others.
One of these people is Ed Walters. He's 22 when he meets Sinatra for the first time in Las Vegas.
I came to the Sands from New York City for a special mission, and the casino manager, the mob guy, told Frank about me. So I met him in the casino. He walked up and, "I hear a lot about you, kid." He called me kid that first time, then called me kid for the next 20 years. Frank would come by and ask me how I'm doing, and he started talking to me. He just didn't want me to end up like the other mob guys and end up broke or screwed up or blowing his money. Or he would always tell me, you gotta get educated. And the next time he came in, the next thing, he started to bring me books to read. He took an interest in this young man, me. He just wanted me to have a better life than other guys he saw.
The Empire State Building is lit up like a beacon in the darkness. The lights from New York City's skyscrapers glisten alongside it. Frank Sinatra sings live.
I'm in the autumn of the year, and now I think of my life as vintage wine from fine old kegs. From the brim to the dregs, it poured sweet and clear. It was a very good year.
James Kaplan, Sinatra expert.
He gazed across the river at the great city where, if you could make it in New York, as the song lyrics go, you could make it anywhere. He knew that he had to make it in the city, and he knew that he would.
I just feel that every time I went to bat to do something in my work, I wanted it to be the best.
James Kaplan.
When Sinatra's parents realized that he couldn't do anything else than singing, his mother bought him two things. She bought him a car. Imagine that. She bought him a car. This, again, in the depths of the Depression, he had his own car, and she bought him a kind of sound system. It was an amplifier and a microphone. And the car and the sound system made Sinatra a viable singer who suddenly other musicians were willing to work with.
I will. I'm Frank. We're looking for jobs. How about it?
Now, equipped with the right tools, his mother gets him into the boy band the Hoboken Four. The group wins first place in a radio show.
Radio show, Major Bowes Amateur, Hoboken Four, 1935.
Frank Sinatra begins training his voice obsessively.
Even though he was a genius, he didn't just roll out of bed and start singing beautifully in the morning. He would go into training before he made a record. He would smoke less or not at all. He would drink less or not at all. He did vocal exercises every day of his life. He studied the lyrics of every song he sang as if they were a poem before he ever sang a note. And so he would come to inhabit that song deeply.
Photos of Frank Sinatra singing. Till Bronner, jazz musician, subtitles. For Frank Sinatra, the handheld microphone was a problem at first because he'd come from an era where you sang without a microphone. Or the microphone stood on a stand somewhere. Even in a studio, you never held the microphone. In the TV studios, it hung over him as well. The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, NBC TV special, A Man and His Music, December 7th, 1966. Not having to hold a mic, Sinatra gesticulates as he sings. She is a garble, not even Dietrich, but a sweet trick. Who can make me believe it's a beautiful world? Oh, show not a bit. She's got a natural kind of wit. She'd shine anywhere. And she hasn't got platinum hair. The most beautiful house in the world. It's got a mortgage. What do I care? It's goodbye, girl. To the one and only beautiful girl.
He slowly began picking up the mic, holding the microphone rather low, no higher than the chin, so you can still look at the audience. It's a distinguished way to hold it. Hip-hoppers hold it like this and feel the need to beatbox as well, and it's all in the act. Someone in a tux shouldn't hold the mic above the chin. It sounded fantastic. And that problem now, of course, is... Nice and easy NBC special, A Man and His Music, November the 22nd, 1981. Why, it would be a crime, 'cause nice and easy does it. Nice and easy does it. Nice and easy does it every time. Good evening. Black and white footage of the bright lights of New York.
He's 16 when he goes to New York for the first time without his parents. He hangs around in music clubs. There, among others, he hears Billie Holiday sing. Some say he later had an affair with her.
Mean to Me, Billie Holiday, 1929. Mean to Me. Original black and white footage and photos of Billie Holiday singing. Gee, honey, it seems to me you love to
see me crying. He saw that she was a great, not only a great jazz artist, not only a great musician, but an amazing communicator. That she got across the emotions of a song as nobody else did. From Billie Holiday, Frank learned to tell a story, to sing the lyrics of a song and really convey the emotion of the song.
Sinatra soon leaves the Hoboken Four. His mother gets him yet another job as a singing waiter at a lodge called the Rustic Cabin. The evening show is broadcast live in New York. Big band leader Harry James hears him sing and hires the 24-year-old. But just 2 months later, in January of 1940, Sinatra leaves to join the famous orchestra of the star trombonist Tommy Dorsey.
A graphic of Tommy Dorsey playing his trombone.
Big bands are the heart of the music scene at the time. Independent solo artists don't yet exist.
Saturday Night, short film. The All-Star Bond Rally, 20th Century Fox, 1945. Frank sings with a large band on either side of him. I sing the song that I sang for the memories I usually see. Until Gregory Porter, jazz singer.
It's conversational. Almost like it's pouring out of your mouth. Oh, and accidentally somebody press the record button.
With his unmistakable voice, Sinatra quickly sings himself to the forefront of the band. Suddenly, his sound is more important than Tommy Dorsey's.
Dorsey plays trumpet.
The difficult thing between Sinatra and Dorsey, this father figure, was that almost from the beginning, Sinatra began to catch on. Sinatra was in awe of everything about Dorsey immediately.
Dorsey was a brilliant musician who was also a great band leader. He was also a tough guy. He was a macho man. He would, if he didn't like something that one of the members of his band was doing, he would attack the guy physically. He was scared of nobody. Sinatra liked everything about Dorsey, the cologne he wore, the toothpaste that he used, the clothes, everything that Dorsey did and emanated impressed Sinatra. Sinatra wanted some of this. He wanted to be like Dorsey. He wanted to be not just the brilliant musician, but the brilliant musician who had money, who had style, who had power.
The song is You, Walton High School, New York City, 1943.
There was a sweetness about him. You won't believe this, but there was almost an innocence about him. And he was very romantic and very respectful.
He had a, it's going to sound strange description, but a sophisticated, elegant sadness that he could deliver.
He seemed to think harder about how to deliver a performance. And it's part of the reason that he became the legend that we all know now.
He had this intense vulnerability about him, and he learned to work that. It's insulting to women to compare it to a dog whistle. I wouldn't do that, but there was something in this voice that got to women on an extremely visceral and emotional level.
Swooner Crooner, Looney Tunes, 1944, a cartoon. Chickens hurry to watch the singing crooner. Love-struck, they gaze at the bow tie wearing chicken.
Your arms this way.
They pant at the sight of the stick-thin chicken.
I always say, if you're gonna look dead, dress dead. You should have seen my first tuck. The one that I wore way back when I started out as a band singer. I think it cost about 20 bucks in those days. Everybody used to tease me about how I used to hang on to the microphone. You remember that? They thought I was hanging on because I was so skinny. If I let go, I'd fall down. That was not true. The reason I held on to the mic was that if I had raised my arms in that tuck, it had wound up as a vest. But I was proud of it.
The love-struck chickens fawn over the crooner who sings into a microphone made out of a tin can.
We interrupt this program for a special news bulletin.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
I'll Never Smile Again, 1940. Black and white film footage of people looking at framed photos of those killed in the attack at Pearl Harbor.
I'll Never Smile Again came out at the beginning of World War II. It became a huge hit because the men and boys of America had gone off to war, and this was a song of longing and of separation and of missing somebody intensely. And this was a feeling, an emotion that all of America was feeling at that time. And so the record just became a smash hit.
The song I'll Never Smile Again makes Sinatra the consoler of the nation. Even today, after tragic events, U.S. radio stations play Frank Sinatra's song to console people.
A montage of Americans mourning tragic events in their country's history. The terrorist attack on the Twin Towers. Beside a floral tribute and an American flag, a mournful woman reads a card. Madison Square Gardens, 1974.
Early in World War II, Sinatra got a reputation as a draft dodger, and it was a reputation he never really lived down. He was classified 4F because of a perforated eardrum. A lot of people thought that was a fiction. It was not. He actually had a perforated eardrum. Sinatra was the most hated man in the armed forces during World War II.
A lot of this had to do with the fact that the soldiers and sailors felt that Frank had not only evaded the draft, but he was at home messing around with their women. And to a great degree, they were right.
I thought maybe they're ready for a new kind of singer, or a different kind of singer. All week
long I dreamed. Frank Sinatra leaves the Tommy Dorsey Band in September of 1942. He wants to start a solo career, a bold move. His female fans stay true to him. Thousands storm his solo concerts. His fans are called Bobby Soxers, nicknamed after their hip little socks.
When I was about 12 years old, I cut school and I went to the Paramount Theater. It was a Monday morning, the 10:30 show. And I got picked up by the police, the truant officers, that were going specifically to where they thought people who were cutting school. I never made it into the theater. I was taken right away to the police station. They took my fingerprints and they took a mugshot. And I said, can I please call my mother? Because where are you? I'm in prison. I'm in jail on 42nd Street, around the corner from the Paramount Theater. What are you doing there? You're supposed to be in school. I said, I know, but I wanted to see Frank Sinatra.
Frank gives up to 10 performances a day. Everybody wants to hear him sing. He has become known as The Voice.
Frank sings to a packed out theater.
If your heart never could yield,
love-struck women watch him sing.
Then I'd rather. He was not only a wonderful singer, his voice and everything, but he was an actor, and a very good actor.
Quand on est chanteur,
a singer needs to interpret a song so that the audience can understand it. He says what the audience thinks, but isn't able to express in words.
And for lyric writers, that's really a gift.
Cry for something that might have been.
My name is Marilyn Bergman.
And my name is Alan Bergman.
We're married, in case there's any question.
And we're lyricists. We write the words.
Which one do you think grabs the Oscar? The winner is Michelle Legrand and Alan Marilyn Bergman.
Academy Awards, Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, Los Angeles, April the 14th, 1968. Marilyn and Alan Bergman collect their award.
So easy for us to fall in love.
The host shakes their hands and hands them their Oscar.
What's your hurry?
Oh, it's heavy.
It's heavy.
Well, we got them in stereo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just think of the circle. You know, here is a Bobby Soxer who was
arrested
and ends up writing songs.
For going to
song.
The Paramount Theater.
Yeah, writing songs.
To see
song.
Him instead of going to school.
And then writing songs for Sinatra.
Did I ever tell him that?
Barely 30 years old, Sinatra works nonstop towards his success, using every possible means.
Soon after he began as a solo artist, he would hire a group of young women to scream at certain point in a song, and it would sort of seed the audience and work the audience up that much more. And the phenomenon built on itself and made Sinatra more and more successful.
At this point, the singer has already been married for several years and has a daughter. Two more children will follow.
The singer hurries to his car.
He was absent throughout their childhoods, most of the time. His natural impatience always led him off very quickly to the next thing, whether there was a next thing at that moment or not. He couldn't really stand to stick around.
Ever since America entered World War II, Frank Sinatra has encouraged Americans with his songs. But he also raises money for war bonds, together with other artists like Bing Crosby. He's not shy about his political stance. Like most immigrants, He reveres U.S. President Roosevelt, and he supports him in his election campaign. Frank Sinatra is a staunch Democrat. Only a few months after the end of World War II in 1945, a short film starring Frank Sinatra opens in movie theaters. It wins him his first Oscar.
The House I Live In, motion picture, 1945.
The House I Live In was about eliminating prejudice. And what he was seeing at the time was a lot of prejudice against Jews in America, even after everything that was being fought for overseas. Prejudice against his own Italian race being pushed down and other ethnic groups that were being pushed down. And they felt at the time, enough was enough. We've got to sell the story at home, and we need to sell it to kids, the up-and-comers, who are still impressionable.
Somebody in for a licking?
You bet! Blast, mirror!
Yeah, but 10 against 1, that's not very fair.
Ah, come on!
What's it all about?
We don't like his religion.
Look, fellas, religion makes no difference. Except maybe to a Nazi or somebody as stupid. God created everybody. He didn't create one people better than another.
What is America to me? A name, a map, or a flag I see. A certain word, democracy.
Frank Sinatra performs at Madison Square Gardens, 1974.
To me.
The audience are captivated by him.
It was a soundtrack of their lives. They went steady to his music. When somebody loves you, it's no good unless she loves you. All the way. You know, they got married to his songs. You know, love and marriage, go together. They got divorced to his songs, sitting in that bar. If you go away on this summer's day, then they might as well take the sun away. You know, and they got remarried. The second time around, you know. So his music was a soundtrack of their lives.
But especially the people.
Stood in front of a large American flag, Frank Sinatra sings with passion to the packed out venue.
Yes, especially. The people, that's America to me.
Sinatra was the man, you know, growing up in our neighborhood and my friends. Everybody had a Sinatra tape in their car when you were going out.
Those fingers in my hair.
A middle-aged man wearing a high-vis jacket and a baseball cap over his light gray hair drives across a bridge.
My conscience bare, it's witchcraft.
Twice in my career, I had the opportunity to work on the greatest bridges in the world. My name is Gary Russo. I'm a structural ironworking. Sometimes in life, you hit that crossroad or you hit that point where you're maybe you're down and you're feeling there's more to life. And I hit that time just before being 50 years old. I was going through a lot of things that most maybe people go through. Divorce. I was away. I was working out of town. And I was coming back to this hotel room. And this is it. This is my world now. And I remembered what I wanted to do as a young person. It was to entertain. And in that hotel room, I decided to start downloading lyrics. And, you know, with the internet, you could get songs. And so instead of coming back to a lonely room, I came back to a studio.
The streets and skyscrapers of New York City. Yellow taxis drive past advertising video screens on the side of a building. Throngs of people cross the street.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today.
I came back to New York. I was working at the Second Avenue subway. And I was smiling at people passing us. And they they weren't smiling back. They were mad. We were making a lot of noise. We were invading their neighborhood. So after a couple of weeks or months, I asked my supervisors if maybe I could sing at lunchtime to make people smile a little bit.
Footage of Gary singing.
The problem now, of course, is you gotta simply hold your horses.
Sat in the sunshine, New Yorkers watch the singer who looks a lot like Frank Sinatra himself.
Cause nice and easy does it every time.
Little by little, regulars would come and they loved it. Well, they started to stop and smile. And this gentleman asked if he could put it on YouTube. Before I knew it, I was on Good Morning America and all these shows. And it was amazing from that hotel room to coming back and finally doing what you love to do and then having the world open up to it. You know, it changed my life. It absolutely, you know, being the Second Avenue Sinatra.
Nice and easy does it.
A man watches him sing.
Nice and easy does it. Every time.
Smiling, a man waves to him.
Hey.
After his success with The House I Live In, Sinatra advances his Hollywood career. He doesn't just want to sing, he wants to act on camera. Film studios scramble to get their hands on the self-confident star.
Take me out to the ball.
Sinatra stars in films, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, On the Town. Frank pretends to be a tribal warrior.
It's Sinatra here.
My name's Terry O'Neill, I'm a photographer.
Yeah, this is Sinatra at work. That's that shot that you've seen, which is this.
This is the time when I first met him. And I'm standing there when he came round the corner with all these giant bodyguards. And I start to realise what I'd let myself in for. I mean, it shocked me, really. But, you know, that was him. The way he treated women was 150% positive. I mean, if you're a woman, you get swept off your feet like that. He was incredible. He was an absolute total charmer. When you see him operating, you realise he's irresistible.
Dressed in a tuxedo, Frank Sinatra takes the mic. Witchcraft, NBC TV special, 1965.
'Cause it's witchcraft, cuckoo witchcraft, and although strictly taboo. Hey, when you rouse a need in me, my heart says yes indeed in me. Proceed with what you're leading me to. It is such an ancient pitch, but one that I'd never switch. There ain't no nicer witch than you. Then you, oh, you're a lovely witch.
Real bravado of him. I mean, he had such moxie when he was on stage. You know, he could just do anything. I want you and I'll get you. I want you and I'll get you. I got you, I got you. He knew how to get everybody in the room.
Jill Corey, a 19-year-old singer, gets a call from Frank Sinatra. He saw her on stage at the New York nightclub, the Copacabana, and wants to meet her. She agrees to a blind date.
A black and white photo of the young, attractive, dark-haired singer.
I can tell you what happened, but I'd rather sing it because it's exactly what happened. Tonight I have a date with Sinatra. Oh God, I'm experiencing angst. In my virginal state, should he kiss me, I'd faint. And do I call him Frankie or Frank? I'm 19, he's 42. What could we have in common? I never met him before. Has he called the right girl, and is this some horrible prank? Well, a drive through the park with the chauffeur. Dinner and wine and a song. He holds my hand and sings in my ear. It's the beginning of romance. I must ask him something point blank. Did I call him Frankie or Frank? That's what happened.
Women queue outside Paramount Pictures.
Jill Corey isn't the only woman to infatuate the married Frank Sinatra. In one of his songs from a motion picture, we learn that he falls in love too easily and fast.
Anchors Away, motion picture, 1945. Black and white photos of Frank Sinatra in the company of different beautiful women. A woman gazes into his eyes. He poses cheek to cheek with an attractive dark-haired woman.
My heart should be.
Photographs of Frank Sinatra through the years with different women at his side.
'Cause I've been fooled.
Until he got too old to mess around, he was a man who was never faithful to a single woman in his life. He always had to make the next conquest. The next conquest was always crucial to him.
Lovely Ava Gardner joined.
While shooting a movie in the mid-40s, Frank Sinatra meets the Hollywood actress Ava Gardner.
The cement of Grauman's Chinese Theater at Hollywood.
She was a stunning, beautiful woman. I mean, the whole of Hollywood fell in love with her.
Ava Gardner, oh boy, yeah. And always had pretty women.
She was the female Frank Sinatra. You know, she was his total match.
A very combustible kind of lady. Well, he was madly in love with her. I mean, he seemed to be, to me. Watching him with her, I mean, he wanted to be with her every second. And, you know, he was just mad about her, crazy about her. And she was, I'm sure she was in love with him. But Ava Gardner was Ava Gardner. And, you know, she was a very independent woman.
Gloria Frank's a friend of Sinatra's.
I guess she had moods, she had temper, tantrums. So their personalities at times, I guess, clashed.
We're taken on a journey past the city's liquor stores.
Drinking was a big part of their relationship. It fueled the relationship, it fueled the excitement of the relationship, it also fueled the dissipation, the breakup, the dissolution of the relationship. It fueled alcohol, anger. Frank was a mean drunk, he was a bad drunk. Ava Gardner was also a mean drunk and a bad drunk. When they drank, bad things happened. They fought, they smashed furniture, they hit each other, and then they had great makeup sex. That was their relationship for a while.
The superstar would do anything for Ava Gardner, including leave his wife.
He was spending more and more time with Ava Gardner while he was still married to Nancy Sinatra. It became public.
Conservative America is in shock as Sinatra does the unthinkable. He divorces his wife Nancy and marries Ava Gardner. It's a scandal. After all, a perfect family, even if just a facade, is the recipe for a man's success in the post-war era. There's a change in the political climate, too.
America became very politically conservative after World War II, and Sinatra was a left-leaning liberal, and a lot of America began to feel that here was a guy who not only had dodged the draft in World War II, but he was almost a communist. People were scared of Russia, were terrified of Russia. And so America was sort of girding itself, sort of gathering in, protecting itself, and becoming more right-wing.
At the end of the 40s, Frank Sinatra's record sales collapse. Folk music is all the rage.
Mule Train, Frankie Lane, 1949.
Ultimately, it gets out that Frank Sinatra took part in a mafia conference in Cuba in 1947. According to the press, he fraternizes with criminals.
Every entertainer in the era of nightclubs in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and into the 60s, was intimate with organized crime because organized crime ran the nightclubs. Frank fraternized with these guys and therefore implicitly and at times explicitly broke the law by having some of these people, especially Sam Giancana, the head of the Chicago Mafia, around places that he owned in part. But Frank was not a mafioso. It was the toughness that he saw in the mafiosi that he idolized. This man, who was not only Italian-American, who was not only hanging out with the mafia, who was not only politically liberal, who was not only not selling records, and he had deserted his family. And so this was when America really, around 1950, 51, 52, America really dropped him definitively.
Frank Sinatra loses his record contract with Columbia. Movie offers are a thing of the past. His elaborate lifestyle ruins him, and he's forced to perform at small nightclubs again.
He was broke, had no money. His singing career was waning. Her career was really rising, and she was at the top of the game. And she was on location in Africa doing Mogambo. He wanted to go over and see Ava. And so he got a ticket and flew to wherever it was. And he got off the plane carrying gifts for everybody, small gifts, and a Christmas tree, a tiny Christmas tree that he had brought from New York, I think, done up for her. And when he arrived, everybody came to greet him and say hello, 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 except for Ava, who kind of just sat back and waited for him to come and see her. And it was not a great reunion, and it just broke his heart.
The couple separates shortly after. Frank Sinatra shares his pain with millions of men.
Except you and me.
One for My Baby, Royal Festival Hall, London, 1970.
Set 'em up, Joe. I got a little story I think you ought to know. We're drinking, my friend, to the end of a brief episode. Make it one for my baby and one more for the road.
2:45, there's no one in the place. You know, he paints the picture with his voice.
I know the routine.
If you were brokenhearted, well, you're talking to the bartender and you just tell him, I'm about to leave, just give me one more. One drink for my baby, who's not with me, and one more for the road. Oh, it's a touching story.
Easy and sad. I could tell you a lot, but it's not in a gentleman's code.
He takes a drag on a cigarette.
One for my baby, and one more for the road.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Frank Sinatra seeks refuge in the night in Las Vegas. Here he can live the life that he loves.
It's adventure, it's possibility, it's the unknown, it's the fact that your guide, Frank Sinatra, is willing to take chances and go places that most of us mere mortals wouldn't think of doing. It all happened at night, once the sun went down, and I can think of no entertainer who captured that sense of adventure and possibility after dark than Frank Sinatra did.
the bright lights of Las Vegas casinos.
Frank, he had an aura that you could feel when you're around him, you could feel in the room. When he entered the Sands property, the place had a vibration going through it all. He's just one of those magical guys that has it.
A betting chip rolls across a table and lands on a pile of cash.
He understood we're in business, because a lot of entertainers don't. They entertain, they act foolish, they don't realize what we're doing. We had a guy who was, you know, 80,000 winner, which is a ton of money, and his wife was with him, and we're afraid of the guy quitting. So we got a hold of Frank. Frank came down. I remember Frank said to me, keep the game going quick, I'll take care of it. Frank sat next to the wife, who adored him, you know. And in 3 or 4 hours, we had most all our money back.
Frank Sinatra lives at night. He doesn't go to sleep until dawn. His entourage has to keep up.
We stayed up till dawn. One night I made him laugh so hard. We were in Las Vegas. We had been doing one-nighters around the country. And then we pulled into Las Vegas to the Desert Inn. We were doing two shows. We did the second show. Now it's 4:30 in the morning, and we're in a big restaurant, and Frank's got four or five guys here, including me, and he's having a good time. And at 4:30 in the morning, I got up, and I started to walk away. He said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to bed. He said, what for? I said, I got to go to the cemetery. Get up early in the morning, go to the cemetery, and visit those guys. He said, what guys? I said, all those guys who died trying to stay with you every night. And he started laughing. He said, go to bed.
Frank Sinatra can't be alone. He's only happy on stage or in the studio. The rest of the time, he's moody and depressed.
Alcohol became a greater crutch for him throughout his life, to the point where I really think that he was an alcoholic. He depended on drinking. At the same time, he was very slow to get drunk. He could drink an enormous amount without being visibly impaired. He was known commonly to drink an entire fifth of whiskey in one night.
He really dishes it out when he's drunk. Fist fights, brawls, and quarrels. No holds barred.
One night, I ask him how he's doing. He said, what are you asking me? I said, I'm just asking how you're doing. And we started yelling at each other, you know? And, you know, stop the question, stop the bullshit, do your job. And I told him, you. And we got angry. I ended up leaving because Frank is saying, you know, you son of a bitch, I'll get you fired.
A roulette wheel spins, footage of the Sands Hotel.
Carl Cohen called me the next day. Carl Cohen was a casino manager. And very wise man, Frank said, Eddie, you two were at each other's throats. You missed something, didn't you? And I said, oh, man. I get emotional right now. I'm sorry.
He tries to hold back tears.
I said, yeah, I miss it. I missed something. I did. Carl said, you two guys are friends. Are friends? He said, all right, here, stay at the house until you hear from me. The next day, guy drove up at the house, came out with a box, and it was all the Reprise records he had made up to that time. And he said, kid.
He takes a moment to compose himself.
He said, kid, get back to work. On a note, I went back to work the next day. And I remember him coming down after the show. I just looked at him and smiled. and he smiled, everything was okay.
The bright lights of the Las Vegas Strip.
The Las Vegas entertainment industry lives off the legend of Frank Sinatra to this day. In December of 2015, the casinos celebrate the 100th birthday of Old Blue Eyes with exhibitions and shows.
A makeup artist puts blue contact lenses into a performer's eyes.
When somebody loves you, it's no good unless he loves you all the way. You remember that song? That was the first song that I fell in love with Frank Sinatra. And it's been a love affair with his music my whole life. Well, my name is Bob Anderson. My profession is, you would call me an entertainer. I'm an impressionist as well. My impressions are sincere tributes to the great singers of the Great American Songbook. Now, as you can see, I don't look anything like Frank Sinatra right now. So, his job is to change that. Ron Wild is my makeup artist. He's very well known in our industry.
The makeup artist carefully applies latex to the performer's nose, altering the entire shape of it. He then adds flesh-colored latex to the side of his face.
It's a big change. I get about 6 component parts on my face. He changes my forehead, on my temples, my nose, my chin, my eyes, and the hair.
The makeup artist changes the whole shape of his face and moves back the performer's hairline.
And after he gets into it and starts doing it, I start losing myself. You know, I'm saying, where did I go here?
The makeup artist adds a brown hairpiece with a neat short fringe.
I'm starting to feel like Frank Sinatra in a minute. Okay? It's getting very close.
A photo of the two performers shows the similarities between them.
Vince. Frank Sinatra gave Vince Falcone a lot of his musical arrangements with one request, that Vince keep his music playing. That was his request.
My name is Vincent Falcone. My profession is pianist, conductor, musician. Mr. Sinatra was worried that the music would not last. He told me that he wanted this music perpetuated for all time, and I was to do what I could to keep it alive, and it was more of a yes, sir, I will, you know.
The toughest part of doing my show is, what song do you leave out? That's the toughest thing, because Frank Sinatra had 1,200 songs that he recorded. 1,196 of them were great, he said.
I was wondering.
The orchestra tune up. Vincent Falcone.
Well, many of these people in this orchestra were with me with Mr. Sinatra when he was here at Caesar's Palace and at the Golden Nugget. Many of these gentlemen, in fact, I joke about my saxophone section. You know, people ask me, how old is your saxophone section? I say, they're deceased, you know, because the average age of my saxophone players is well into the 70s, and one of my saxophone players is in his 80s.
The 32-piece orchestra performs 5 times a week, together with singer Bob Anderson. They plan to take the show Frank the Man on tour across America. Even years after Frank Sinatra's death, his songs still draw big crowds.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. And if you can use some exotic clothes as a bar in Bombay, come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, we'll float down to Peru. And in Llama Land, there's a one band.
In the early 50s, a showbiz comeback for Frank Sinatra seems unimaginable.
In 1 year, he lost his record contract.
He lost Ava Gardner. He lost his film contract. I mean, everything. He lost everything in 9 months. It was all gone. When Capitol signed him in 52, he was on the bottom. So what happened after that was truly remarkable.
Photographs of Frank Sinatra recording.
Frank Sinatra doesn't care about his worn-out vocal cords. He knows this is probably his last chance. He looks for songs and lyrics that he likes and gathers the best people in the music biz around him. He has only one goal, to be the best once again.
I went to a lot of recording dates that Frank did, and that was fascinating to be there and watch him at work in that setting with the orchestra. And, you know, he was very, very direct at everything he wanted. He knew exactly what he wanted to hear. And, you know, and you didn't think of him as a musician.
A magnifying glass lies over a black and white photo reel of Frank Sinatra singing. Subtitles. Having intelligent lyrics was very important to him. Usually in popular love songs, you just say anything, as long as it rhymes. You rhyme love with above and call it a day. But his standards were much higher. He worked with very good composers and very interesting lyrics. As an artist, he wanted to look strong, but actually he was quite sensitive.
It's the best album of any kind of music I've ever heard. Capitol Records at first didn't want to put it out. It was too lugubrious. It was sad. 16 songs, over 45 minutes of sadness. That was their argument. In the end, it came out and swept the world.
In the wee small hours. In the wee small hours is the first concept album in the history of pop music. While the
whole In the Wee Small Hours, 1955. Original black and white footage of the glamorous Hollywood actress Ava Gardner. Ava and Frank smile as snow falls around them. They turn to each other and share a cheeky grin. Never think of counting
sheep. I mean, the comeback, it was beyond comeback. He was off to the races.
Sinatra ran around after it was done and said, I got my Ava album. I got my Ava album, meaning Ava Gardner, who had discarded him.
I get along without you very well.
I get along without you very well. Sinatra in concert at Royal Festival Hall, London, 1970.
Of course I do. Except when soft rains fall and drip from leaves. Then I recall the thrill of being sheltered in your arms.
He always loved Ava Gardner. I think all his life he loved Ava Gardner the most. You know, I mean, if she came to his concert, I had to make sure. And it was really difficult for me to get a picture of her in the audience watching him. You know, that gave him great pleasure.
Right before the breakup, Ava Gardner secures him one last movie role.
From Here to Eternity.
I figured you'd make a choice. I done it, Prue. I escaped just like I said. Just like I figured.
It is the first time that he was taken seriously as an actor. Finally, out of the sailor suits that he wore in the Gene Kelly musicals of a few years before, they now saw a more serious person. Gregory Peck said, "This is one guy who should never have gone to acting school. You would have ruined him. You can't teach what he has so naturally."
The winner is Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra wins the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for the role of Angelo Maggio.
I'm deeply thrilled and very moved. And I really, really don't know what to say because this is a whole new kind of thing, you know, like song and dance man type stuff.
Frank clutches his Oscar.
With a new record deal in his pocket, all sorts of offers from Hollywood, and his first gold record, he returns to Las Vegas and forms a one-of-a-kind star-studded ensemble, the Rat Pack.
A graphic of Frank Sinatra and the other four tuxedo-wearing crooners in the Rat Pack. The bright lights of Las Vegas.
Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Joey Bishop, and Frank Sinatra call their spontaneous shows summits.
The Rat Pack, Las Vegas, 1961. The men receive a standing ovation.
Frank, in his show, his personal show, could not tell a joke. Didn't know how to tell. He had no rhythm. Remember, here's the world's greatest singer. Had no rhythm for a joke. Frank used to say to me, Eddie, I tell a joke, I do it the way they say, nothing. Joey Lewis walks up and says two words and they're laughing out loud. How the f*** does he do it? You know, there's a magic to these comics that have it. Frank never had that until the Rat Pack shows. Dean showed Frank how to be funny. It started a love between those two that lasted all their lives.
Black and white footage. Dean Martin pours Frank Sinatra a drink.
I like the wonderful words of Mr. Joey Lewis. He says you're not drunk, but you can lay on the floor.
The Rat Pack nights in Las Vegas changed Frank Sinatra and the city.
It went out across the United States and the world as All Night Wild Vegas. That set a tone for Vegas that lasts till this day.
Frank Sinatra was the epitome of cool, the epitome of style. You know, he dressed nice. He carried himself nice. You know. I've got the
world on a string. Fellow Americans now refer to Sinatra as chairman of the board.
What a world, what a life. I've got the whole world on a string, NBC TV special, 1965.
The chairman's stance on political issues is clear. Sammy Davis Jr., an African-American, is also a member of the Rat Pack.
Ocean's 11.
What's so funny?
I knew this color would come in handy one day.
Hey, Josh.
Yeah?
How do you get the stuff off?
Well, what I usually...
Imagine, even in... We're sitting in Las Vegas today. In this city, the biggest... stars who happened to be black could not stay at these hotels because they were black. Stories about draining the pool because Nat Cole swam in it. People wouldn't swim in the pool until it was drained. And eventually it was this courageous figure, Sinatra, who said, either he stays here or I don't stay here. That began to change the conversation.
Women aren't the only ones to fall for Frank Sinatra's charm. Men do too. They want to be like him, venturous, cool, and nonchalant. The American president, John F. Kennedy, is also crazy about Sinatra.
Jack Kennedy was fascinated with Sinatra. Jack Kennedy loved Hollywood, he loved beautiful women, he loved gossip, and Sinatra was at the center of all of that, and Jack Kennedy wanted to be in on that. Sinatra, for his part, was passionately liberal. He was drawn to Kennedy's charisma, to his liberal politics. Sinatra was determined to hitch his wagon to that star, to become connected to Kennedy and his presidential aspirations.
Frank Sinatra sings Kennedy's presidential campaign song.
High Hopes, Kennedy Campaign, Washington, 1960. Everyone wants to back Jack. Jack is on the right track, cause he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. 1960's the year for
Kennedy's election victory is a personal triumph for Frank Sinatra. He thinks he's made a new friend in the president.
Charles Rangel, congressman.
With the Kennedys, he really thought he was one of them, and he wasn't. He really thought he was one of the gang, and that Kennedy was one of the boys.
Jack Kennedy's brother, Bobby Kennedy, was eager to distance itself from Sinatra and his playboy activities. And Frank Sinatra's friendship with Judith Campbell, a woman who the FBI had found, was also spending time with the head of the Chicago Mafia and had become the President of the United States, Jack Kennedy's girlfriend. It was a terrible mixture of factors. It all came to a head in spring of 1962 when Jack Kennedy was going to the West Coast. Bobby Kennedy, who was then the Attorney General of the United States, told his brother Jack, "You may not stay at Frank Sinatra's house in Palm Springs. You have to stay somewhere else instead." And they pulled the plug.
Black and white footage of John F. Kennedy.
In preparation for this trip in spring of 1962, Sinatra had renovated the whole place. He had built a helicopter pad for the president's helicopter. He had put in a special hotline to the White House. And when he found out that Kennedy was going to stay at Bing Crosby, it's the ultimate insult because Bing Crosby was the other great singer of Hollywood. Sinatra was infuriated. He had a meltdown. He had a temper tantrum. He ripped out the hotline, ripped out the phone lines. He threw things around the house. He was breaking things. He was breaking glass, breaking glasses. And he went out, yes, and took a sledgehammer to the concrete of his newly built helicopter pad.
Frank Sinatra's view of the world is shaken. Tuxedos, whiskey, and cigarettes have been replaced by sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Younger pop stars step into the limelight.
The Doors perform at an outdoor music festival. Girl, we couldn't get much higher. Young, carefree hippies dance in the sunshine.
From the late 60s forward, Frank's great challenge was staying on top. He was getting older. He was in 1965, I think he turned 50. And in the years that were following, he was trying to keep pace with the voices of a younger generation.
He keeps working doggedly, releasing several albums each year.
I'm in the autumn of the year.
I think I swallowed a shot glass.
Listen,
Jack?
Lowell.
It must be playing the viola.
If any popping of peas, let's stop.
Yeah, if they don't thump, if they're a real thump, I can't.
Well, I don't thump, you know. I'm a sneaky pea popper. The biggest complaint I have about a lot of the kids who sing today is that I can't understand what they're saying. If I could only understand some of the words, I might be more interested in what they're doing, but I can't. There's no enunciation and there's no clarity of diction.
But now the days are short. I'm in the autumn of the year.
How long? 3:20? 4:12.
The days are
Frank
short.
Listens to his recording.
I'm in the autumn of the year.
Solemn, he shakes
and
his head.
I think of my life as vintage wine from fine.
Focused, Frank listens intently.
From the brim to the dregs.
Showing little emotion, he shakes his head.
Sweet and clear. It was a very good year.
As he listens on, a sadness washes over him. He looks at the others in the recording studio.
The Beatles, the Rolling Stones, The Doors and Simon and Garfunkel stormed the charts. How much longer will Frank Sinatra sell records?
Sinatra was riding around Los Angeles with his valet and heard the song three times in a row. He kept changing the channel on his car radio. Light My Fire kept coming on, and Sinatra got so furious that he lifted up his leg and with the heel of his Cuban boot smashed the car radio. That's how much he liked rock and roll.
Oh, that's pretty sneaky.
His daughter Nancy conquers the American charts as well. Frank Sinatra struggles to keep pace with the younger generation.
One of these days, these boots are gonna walk downtown with you.
I think that if 1938 ever comes back, you'll be a smash.
Listen to the rhythm of the gentle bus.
Medley with Nancy Sinatra, 1966.
Happy again.
Father and daughter sing and dance side by side.
He retreated into conservatism because he hated the direction of popular music. Vietnam War was going on. There were a lot of protests in the United States. All the young people were protesting. Frank was very nervous about all of it.
Is his relationship with Mia Farrow, the actress 30 years his junior, the way out of the crisis? The couple marry in 1966, only to divorce again just 2 years later.
She was like a little girl. She was a little gamin, you know? She was very sweet, and that was a big surprise, I'm sure, to everybody when he suddenly married her.
She wanted everything. She wanted the big career. She wanted the big man, and Sinatra was the biggest man there was, and so she set her cap for Sinatra. She got him, but they couldn't really stay together because she wanted to move her movie career along, and he didn't like that.
Sinatra can't handle the self-confident modern woman. He expresses his frustration in his own way.
Sinatra had a very mean sense of humor, and part of that sense of humor had to do with this the particular kind of firecracker. It's called a cherry bomb. It's an American firecracker. It's about that big. It's called a cherry bomb because it looks like a cherry. It's spherical, it's red, it has a green fuse, and it's extraordinarily powerful. It is almost as powerful as a hand grenade.
Mia snuggles a white cat.
Mia had a beloved cat that was deaf. The cat was deaf, and Frank played a very mean trick of lighting a cherry bomb next to this cat, and the cat jumped when this explosion happened and ran away and was never seen again. Mia lost the cat. So imagine, you can imagine that wasn't very good for the relationship either.
When both his albums flop in 1970 and 1971, Sinatra feels behind the times. He retires.
In 1971, he had been on the road for over 30 years. And Sinatra personified so much and embodied so much of the 20th century, of its political currents, its cross currents, its changing changing cross currents of American popular culture, of world popular music, of the culture of celebrity that has become so huge in everybody's life.
Frank Sinatra campaigns for the Republican Ronald Reagan. But before long, the nearly 60-year-old realizes he doesn't take well to playing second fiddle.
Sinatra talks with Ronald Reagan.
Not even playing golf in Palm Springs brings him enough recognition, despite having a woman on his side again. Barbara Marx, a former showgirl. She wants to see him sing again.
She was the perfect person for him. She was smart. She could handle him. She knew what was best for him. She helped almost organize his life, especially at Caesars. I know if we want to go over there, we had to get clearance from her to even see him. But that's the way Frank wanted it.
Barely 2 years after saying goodbye to the stage, he returns. His comeback concert alone makes him an American icon. On October the 13th, 1974, he sings at Madison Square Garden in New York for 20,000 fans.
The audience get to their feet and applaud Frank Sinatra. As surrounded by his team, he makes his way towards the stage. Frank shakes hands with some of the audience as he passes. Cameras flash as he takes to the stage and grabs the mic.
She gets hungry. She loves the theater. Doesn't come late. She'd never bother with anyone she'd hate. That's why the lady is a tramp. Doesn't like dice games with barons and earls. Won't go to Harlem dressed in ermine and pearls. Will not dish the dirt with the rest of those girls. And that's why this chick is a tramp. Loves the free, fine, wild, knocked-out cuckoo, groovy wind in her hair, nights without a care. She's broke, but it's open. She loathes California. It's cold and it's damp. That's why the lady.
It marks the beginning of his third career, one with fewer albums and bigger concerts. But there's still one song missing from his repertoire. Soon, it will make him immortal.
The songs that make up the American Popular Songbook have been performed by a great many people. It's not unusual to hear many people, particularly singers, say, once Frank got hold of the song, it was his. They couldn't touch it. It was inherent in him to tell a story and song as if it was of his own life.
New York, New York.
The song New York, New York was originally sung by Liza Minnelli in a film by Martin Scorsese. Frank Sinatra sees the film at the movie theater.
Even today, I wanna be a part of it. New York, New York.
We were going to perform at Carnegie Hall in New York, and I was there with the orchestra, and he came in to the rehearsal room with a piece of music in his hand. And it was the sheet music to New York, New York. He had heard it in the movie. And he put it on the piano. He said, here, play this for me. And I played it for him. He said, oh, we gotta do this song. You know, da-da-da-ba-da-da-da. He would walk out on stage and sing the song. Well, the crowd went nuts.
The theme from New York, New York, Concert for the Americas, 1982.
My small town blues, they are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York.
In the years to come, he'll give countless concerts all over the world, even as performing gets harder for him with age.
Anywhere, it's up to you, New York, New York.
I would try to be as helpful to him as I could. If he forgot what the next song was, I would tell him. If he was introducing the wrong song, If he forgot to introduce somebody that he wanted to in the audience or in the orchestra, I would try to get it. And he appreciated that.
A black and white photo of Frank Sinatra stood on stage with his arms outstretched and wearing a broad grin.
He was standing there, waiting for me. And I walked up to him, and he put his hand out to me. And he said, thanks, kid. One of the most moving moments of my life. I'll tell you.
In the 80s, young musicians start discovering Frank Sinatra as well.
Bono at the Grammys.
Rock and roll people love Frank Sinatra because Frank Sinatra has got what we want. Swagger and attitude. He's big on attitude. Serious attitude. Bad attitude. Frank's the chairman of the bad. Where are you? Rock and roll plays at being tough, but this guy, well, he's the boss. The boss of bosses. The man. The big bang of pop. I'm not going to mess with him. Are you?
Robbie Williams.
Now, the end is near. If you know the words, sing up. If you don't, shut up and sound crap. The final curtain. My friends, I'll say it clear and state my case, on which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full. I've traveled each and every highway. Come on, and bore everybody.
One time when he was 78 years old, Frank went out and he was singing. He'd got to the fourth song and he totally blanked on the lyrics. He just stood there and he started whispering, "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry." Now the orchestra, not realizing that Frank is with him, kept playing, and then pretty soon they realized that he wasn't singing and they start winding their instruments down one at a time to this eerie silence in this huge auditorium. And now Frank is saying, "I'm sorry." And he turned around like he was going to walk off stage. And some guy way up on top of the arena stood up and shouted as loud as he could, "That's all right, Frank. That's all right. We love you, Frank. We love you, Frank." And he started applauding. And the guy next to him started applauding, and the people applauding. And pretty soon there was 100 people applauding and 1,000 people and 2,000. Now the whole arena was applauding and cheering. Everybody in the arena was applauding. And Frank looked away, and he had like a tear in his eye, and he started to walk off stage, and he turned around and he went back to center stage, and they kept applauding and cheering, and he finally quieted him down after about 5 minutes, and he went into the next number, and he drilled that song, boom, bang, pow, like he was a kid again.
My Way, Barcelona, June 3rd, 92.
Frank Sinatra dies on May the 14th, 1998, at the age of 83. His voice lives on.
Whenever there was doubt, I ate it up, then spit it out. I faced it all, and I stood tall.
A graphic of Frank Bowes, the lead of his microphone snakes into his signature.
I had my fill.
The curtains close.
My share of losing.
Wearing his trademark tuxedo, now, the graphic of Frank picks his hat up off the sidewalk. He stands beneath a sign, Sinatra, the voice of America.
Kind of
the end credits roll.
To think I did all. Not in a shy way. No, 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 not. I did it. My. For what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then not to say the things that he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. That record shows I took the blows and did it.
The audience get to their feet.
My.